The British Prime Minister Theresa May is to present her new Brexit plan today after the withdrawal treaty was heavily rejected last week by MPs. Apparently her plan means going after the backstop, but there was mention too of a bilateral agreement between Ireland and Britain, a proposal that Number 10 was quick to dismiss, dismissed equally peremptorily by the government here in Dublin. In a few minutes, I'll be speaking to Matthew Paris, Times columnist and former Tory MP, and also Andrew Gimson, contributing editor to the Conservative Home and author of a biography of Boris Johnson. But first, I'm joined on the line by Labour Party peer and former Northern Ireland Secretary of State, Peter Hayne. Lord Hayne, good morning to you.
Morning, Sean.
Whatever a British paper one opens this morning, one thing is clear. Mrs. May has the backstop in her sights. All sorts of commentary, including that Daily Telegraph speculation. The Good Friday Agreement might end up being tweaked to try to find a way out of the impasse. What do you make of where we are now?
Well, I've always been extremely disturbed about the drift of events around Brexit as regards the Irish border and the continued integrity of the Good Friday Agreement. And what's happening now is that Brexiteers desperately thrashing around for some kind of solution, including the former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Owen Paterson, who served under David Cameron, who should know better because he ought to know what is going on in Northern Ireland and the island of Ireland and what the history is. So they're desperately trying to find a solution because they've never had a plan of their own or a credible answer to the border question. And so we read this stuff from right-wing sources and hardline Brexiteers that the Good Friday Agreement might be amended or that a bilateral negotiation could take place with the Irish Republic. Both of those things are completely out of the question. I cannot see the Irish government agreeing to a bilateral deal outside the 27 of the European Union because that would breach European Union collective responsibility, which Dublin is signed up to. So I can't imagine that happening. And remember that the Good Friday Agreement is a bilateral agreement between the Irish Republic and the and the United Kingdom, but it has also been underpinned internationally and in particular by the European Union. So to seek to unpick that would actually take you back to Brussels as well, and that's a dead end, frankly, as it should be. What the United Kingdom should be doing, and everybody concerned to resolve this Brexit mess, and it is getting messier by the day, and I think it still will, what they should be doing is the red line should be maintaining an open border, maintaining the Good Friday Agreement, and then look at what other possible solutions there might be around beyond that, but not in any way to tamper with them, because to tamper with the Good Friday Agreement is to tamper with the peace process and to undermine it, taking us back to who knows where.
Is it possible that Mrs. May, in a kind of Machiavellian way, is, we might say, pandering to the DUP and indeed the Brexiteers on the Tory right, knowing that she's liable to be pushed by Parliament next week in the direction of a softer Brexit, and maybe that's what she's happy herself to go along with, in the knowledge that if Parliament takes the matter out of the government's hands, well, then she can't be blamed by her party and there's a better chance of her keeping the party together.
Who knows, Sean? What is clear, however, about the only thing that is clear in this astonishing mess, which is unprecedented in modern British history. And when I say modern British history, I cannot think of a parallel situation in living memory and going way beyond that for generations and generations upon generations to find the British government in an absolute shambles and nobody having a clear answer to what the solution is. And so I think we have to go back to basics. As far as the island of Ireland is concerned, those two principles are should not be in any way touched, the principle of the open border and the principle of the Good Friday Agreement. And then beyond that, you then need solutions to deliver that. And I've read all sorts of fanciful stuff, including, I'm sorry to say, from my friends in the DUP and from MPs and former ministers like Owen Paterson and David Davis and Peter Lilly and Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson. about, oh, well, you know, the Irish government doesn't want a closed border, nor does the UK, therefore it won't happen. You cannot just say that. You've got to actually will the means, and the means are common regulatory agreements and principles and common customs arrangements. If you don't have those, you can't have an open border. It's been said, and I said all along, I said from the beginning in 2016 that the Irish border problem is the Achilles heel of a hard Brexit, and they will not face up to it.
But the shambles isn't confined to the government side, is it?
How do you mean?
In the sense that the Labour Party in Britain doesn't appear to have a clear policy on what should happen.
Actually, I thought Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, who's been incredibly on top of everything over this past couple of years, was very clear on the Andrew Marr programme on the BBC yesterday about Labour's programme. What we have wanted, what the party leadership has wanted at least, I think the solution needs to be much clearer. But what they've wanted is common customs and single market arrangements. And that is the only solution to the Irish border. So I think where Labour stands on that question is clear. Can I just say one other thing on the backstop?
Sure.
People are having a go at the Irish government about the backstop, which is an insurance policy. It's basically saying, because we have no idea, even if this agreement which Theresa May signed with the European Union, the 27, even if this agreement is passed somehow, though it's hard to see how, even if that is the case, the future trading arrangements beyond 2020 are not agreed. And that is why an insurance policy was insisted upon by both Dublin and Brussels to make sure that we don't get into exactly the kind of impasse, even if we got beyond the end of March and somehow exited the European Union as the Conservative government wants. There's no certainty about the future. So that it was an insurance policy. And I think the Irish government is absolutely right. I don't think they should budge on it. By all means, talk. And see if what can be done. But the agreement was agreed. It is an international treaty, and I think they should stick to it, and I'm sure they will.
And before I let you go, that car bomb attack outside the courthouse in Derry on Saturday evening, I mean, is that something that, if you like, can be seen in isolation, or is it part of this general state of uncertainty now surrounding Brexit?
I said now for a couple of years since the referendum that if you create uncertainty and instability, and you have that in spades with the Stormont suspended and Brexit going who knows where, and the consequences for the Irish border being who knows what, then the opportunities for terrorists and troublemakers to try and unravel the whole Good Friday Peace Agreement, which they never subscribed to in the first place, and the group, the dissident IRA group, believed to be behind this, as I understand it from the police, they've always wanted to undermine it, and I don't think you can see the Londonderry bomb in isolation from the shambles that we now face on the border question.
Lord Peter Hain, thank you very much indeed for joining us, former Secretary of State in a Labour government for Northern Ireland. If I could turn to you now, Matthew Paris, what can you tell us? What's your understanding of what Mrs. May's strategy at this point, if she has one?
Well, just say firstly, I agree with everything that Peter Hain has said about unscrambling the Belfast Agreement or doing a bilateral treaty with Ireland. It's for the birds. And Theresa May must know it's for the birds. And it reeks either of desperation on her part or of a plan. And I think the plan is this. She just wants to keep the discussion going until we are very close to the 29th of March. She just wants to keep saying that she's got a new idea. There are more things she wants to talk to more people about. She'll be off to Brussels and back from Brussels and to-ing and fro-ing until the 29th of March, whereupon it becomes crash out without a deal or accept my deal. And it's going to be easier for her to bring some of the hardline Brexiteers on board, but not all of them. because a lot of them actually want to crash out without a deal. And what's happening in Parliament this week with these new legislative moves to make the default option on the 29th of March, to make the default option to postpone the Article 50 process, rather than to crash out without a deal, is, I think, unwittingly, that these MPs are playing into her hands, because it may look by the 29th of March that the real option is either Theresa May's deal, or we extend the Article 50 negotiations and perhaps don't leave at all, whereupon I think she's going to bring most of the Tory right back on board behind her deal. Call me Machiavellian, but I think that's the plan.
In other words, that the way of getting out is to go with the deal as the only route out.
Yes, I don't think we've seen the last of her deal by any means. I don't think she's got a majority in the House for her deal, even if the Conservative ERG, the hardline Brexiteers and other Brexiteers, even if they come on board, I don't think she's got a majority, but she's nearly got a majority, as long as she keeps the DUP with her. So although we can, until the cows come home, say why her plans for bilateral treaties with Ireland and all that are rubbish, I think you have to look behind that and see that she's just time-wasting, and she knows she's time-wasting, but that time is precious.
Andrew Gimson, is it possible that defeat majority of 230 votes could somehow be turned around then if what Andrew is saying, or sorry, if what Matthew is saying is correct?
I think that is right, because I think the Tory tribe, I think this, although the questions of policy are very, very important, even more important from the point of view of a third-rate Tory MP who's worried about losing his seat, is keeping the Tory party together. Matthew, by the way, was a first-rate Tory MP, but a lot of them know that they're pretty much unemployable. They couldn't have a successful career in journalism or anything else if they lost their seats. Their whole self-esteem depends on keeping their seats. They therefore know that the Tory party must not split and must not make a total hash of this thing. And although everyone can see faults in Theresa May's deal, as Matthew said, the 29th of March is approaching. It'll be the only deal on the table. The DUP, similarly, don't want to give up their incredibly favourable position until the last possible moment. So they, too, have, in fact, a vested interest in swallowing their pride, or at least finding some face-saving formula on the backstop. I don't know exactly what it will be, and then this deal is still quite likely to go through.
Actually, you were writing on Saturday, Matthew Parris, that what is in fact desirable is a split in the Tory party.
Oh yes, that's what I want to see. I don't think the Tory party can carry on carrying the weight of its right wing, and particularly its hardline Brexiteers. And I think that they needn't be pushed through the door, but I think the door should be indicated to them. I think we need a new right-wing party, a sort of UKIP-style party in Britain, which would then release the Conservative Party to be the moderate, liberal, middle-of-the-road party that it always has been and ought to be.
I think that's utopian, I may say. But I think it's better to have a coalition within the Tory party than a coalition between two parties.
Well, look where it's led us. Look where it's led us, Andrew.
Well, the story isn't over yet, and this is very good for Parliament. These votes really matter. What is said in the House of Commons is enormously important. It has helped to revive Parliament. It's not wholly a bad thing, that.
And what about the prospect of reaching across and trying to get a consensus, which so far she doesn't appear to have been prioritising, despite going through the motions of having some talks, of seeking to get support of a sufficient number of Labour Party MPs that would be in favour of a permanent customs union? Or is that just something she is just not prepared to do, Andrew?
That would cause her such difficulties with her own party that I think she won't go there. I mean, she's going to make sort of feints in all sorts of directions, but I doubt she'd actually do it. I mean, I think the Labour Party itself has profound difficulties in that it's very, very deeply divided, and has, of course, most of the MPs have little confidence in Mr. Corbyn as a potential Prime Minister. But I think she may be able to pick up a few Labour votes, conceivably to outweigh, but I think they might be more on the Eurosceptic side to outweigh irreconcilable people like Dominic Grieve.
So that really is an argument for her to try to keep her own party together, Matthew Parris. If she were to breach one of her own previous red lines and, for the sake of argument, move towards a form of customs union, there probably wouldn't be enough Labour MPs to back her.
No, I agree with Andrew. I think she would probably lose more on her own side than she would gain from the Labour Party, who are not really, at least the leadership of the Labour Party, are not really interested in trying to find a deal or to help her out of her difficulties. And anyway, the problems of a Norway-style solution, once the House and the country came to look at it, are obvious. Why quit membership of the European Union only in order to maintain your obedience to all the rules of the European Union and no longer have any say in making them? I mean, Norway's even worse than Theresa May's deal. I don't think it's a runner.
OK, we'll leave it there. It's a fascinating unfolding story, history being made as we speak and continuing to do so for at least the next 2 months plus. Matthew Parris, columnist with The Times, former Tory MP, and Andrew Gimson, editor with the Tory news website, and also Boris Johnson's biographer. Thank you both.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.